Hi everyone, my name is Eugenia Chow and I run the Instagram account Ugreenia. The Everyday Activist podcast is founded under the belief that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to activism and anyone can get involved. Julian Goldner is a current student and Morehead Cain Scholar at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. At the age of 19, he's the founder and CEO of a social business that produces biodegradable flower pots containing native plants, and he also recently traveled to 8 different countries during his gap year. Having grown up in the living Eden that is Costa Rica, he is also passionate about the environment and aims to integrate sustainability into every aspect of his life. In this episode, we discuss strategies for sustainable travel, tips for starting a social business as a high school student, the meaning of conservation, and Costa Rica as a model for environmental stewardship. I met Julian last year at a scholarship finalist weekend, and I've been since very impressed by the many environmental initiatives he's involved with and the way he manages to live out his values in his everyday life. I had a ton of fun recording this conversation, and I also learned a lot from Julian, so I hope you enjoy this episode as well. Hi, Julian, and welcome to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. Firstly, could you tell us a bit about your background? How did growing up in Costa Rica shape your relationship with the environment? And what are some things, big or small, that you have done or are doing to elevate your positive environmental impact?
Hi, Eugenia. I'm so excited to be here. Related to my background in Costa Rica, I don't know if there's a lot of specific things that really motivated me to become more sustainable or to be interested in this like environmentally friendly world, but there are certain things that I realize that are part of the culture that have been ingrained throughout all of my lifestyle and like since I was a kid, and that have been ingrained in every single Costa Rican, which is when you're surrounded with so much nature and just going to these beaches that are like pristine and have like no trash at all, but also like no development, and you have to drive 30 minutes just to get to the beach through complete nature and there's like barely a road. I feel like that's something that starts getting into people's minds, and people don't realize that we live in such a natural country where it's so biodiverse and so full of nature. And that's something people don't really realize, and it's something I didn't realize until I started traveling. But definitely we're really connected with nature, and it just takes a little bit of an outsider's perspective to really see how connected we are. I remember as a kid, I really admired the US lifestyle and the American lifestyle, and I really wanted to have air conditioning. That was the thing that I thought was developed and was like so first world. And I didn't really like living in Costa Rica because there wasn't that much air conditioning, and I felt like I wanted to live somewhere that had some nice suburbs and a nice street, and just everything was nice and perfect like you'd see in the movies. And then that completely changed as I started growing up, because I realized how special it really was to have this much nature. And even though there's could be bugs everywhere and it's just really, you're living in the jungle sometimes, it's so special, and it's something that you don't really realize until you stop paying attention to the media and to what other people start visualizing that is development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what are some things that you have been doing to elevate your positive environmental impact?
Recently, I've been going vegan, which is probably the biggest thing that I've had to as a personal commitment to the environment that has directly impacted my lifestyle. But also, I've been working with started a company called Cocoseche, whose aim is to make biodegradable flower pots that are made from coconut shells. And we sell them with different types of trees that are native to Costa Rica, that one type is helpful to pollinator species. So it's a tree called Roble de Sabana that helps 534 species of pollinators, from birds to bees and all type of insects. And another one is a tree that helps native bird species. And another one, the last one that we sell, is a fruit tree that is very uncommon, and we're trying to create more awareness to it and have
Costa Ricans realize that this is a tree that you can find in Costa Rica. It has tons of health benefits, and to promote just agrobiodiversity. Also, recently I've been trying to become more self-sufficient and have my own garden at home with my own vegetables. And basically with all this coronavirus pandemic that's happening right now and having to be more of your time at home, it just made me realize how dependent we are on external systems, and trying to have that in our own home and to become more self-sufficient is something that anyone can really start doing no matter where you live. And I think lastly would be just with my photography blog, trying to capture the nature of Costa Rica and have people realize just how beautiful it is. Like, a lot of Costa Ricans don't appreciate Costa Rica's beauty, but also to promote it to travelers and to have people realize how special Costa Rica's nature really is.
Yeah, and I'll definitely add the link to your photography account into the show notes so people can find it.
Yeah, so a lot of these things that you've done, like your business, for example, you did when you were in high school. So I was just wondering, is caring about the environment something that is instilled in students when they're young in Costa Rica? And in what ways does the school curriculum encourage learning about and acting upon environmental issues?
Definitely, yeah. Sustainability is really something that schools have a really big focus on since maybe first grade or earlier. I remember when we were growing up that we would have a rivers show. So we would have a play that was all about rivers and about the three R's and recycling. And that's something that we would, every second grade generation at my school would have to put on display. And also we'd have projects on building or explaining different alternative energy sources. So in fifth grade, I had a biomass project, which was, I remember perfectly. And we'd have a communal garden at school where we'd learn how to grow tomatoes and lettuce and just different types of vegetables. And this was, of course, what I did at my school, which could be a bit different from most schools because it was an American school, not a public school. But also in public schools, I know for a fact that sustainability is a really big focus. Like, you can be driving around and go, you see public schools all around, and there's murals on the side saying how important it is to take care of our rivers and saying how we should have to keep our rivers clean or keep our nature clean or reduce, recycle and stuff like that. So it's something that, coming back from traveling, I've realized even more how people, there's a really intimate connection with nature here. Just things like tree planting trips and projects where we'd collect bottle caps and make artwork from it to protect the sea turtles that come and nest in Costa Rica. It's things that I didn't really think was a big significance or any different from anywhere else, but it's definitely something that, looking back on it, I realized there was a big impact on sustainability, and that's something that maybe other schools around the world were not working on.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that's something that's very unique to Costa Rica, or maybe even other Latin American countries, because most of us, well, at least in Hong Kong, things like tree planting would be something you'd only do as an extracurricular activity, and it's not embedded into the curriculum.
Okay. For us, like in sixth grade or seventh grade, actually several times we would go to a nearby national park and go on cleanups and pick up plastic or pick up trash that was on the roads, or just do some type of community service related to the environment. And another thing that is actually pretty big in schools is being recognized as having a blue flag, which is, I believe it's just a national standard of sustainability that different businesses or buildings even, or schools can have. And it definitely was a big focus in my school, like, to get that blue flag. And I know that around the whole country, there is a big movement towards becoming more sustainable, just to be recognized as being sustainable and having this recognition and certificate.
Mm-hmm. So what are the qualifications for this blue flag?
I'm not entirely sure, but I know there is different ranks. So you can have different amount of stars or different amount of, like each star means you're even more sustainable. And it's just based on waste reduction or sustainable energy sources, how you teach people in your institution to take care of the environment. And it's something that is pretty big here in Costa Rica, and it's a big deal to have this blue flag on your business or on your school or whatever it is. Because Costa Rica is so dependent on ecotourism, it's a big focus that is in this country to make sure that everything is as sustainable as possible, pretty much.
Yeah, so you talked a bit about how you're traveling, especially since you just took a gap year, has made you appreciate Costa Rica a bit more, especially coming back. Could you briefly describe your travels, where you went, and could you notice a difference in how each place responded to environmental issues?
Yes, for sure. Well, to explain a little bit of what my travel was, on my gap year, I started doing workaways. So I'd find work in different parts of the world in exchange for housing and food. And this was a really affordable way to do it, because I could visit a lot of countries and not really have to worry about the price as much of travel, since I could have housing taken care of. And I did this starting in Israel, moved on to Turkey for a week, and then Italy, I spent around a month and a half. I went to France for also a short amount of time, around a week. And then I spent 2 months working in Iceland, came back to Costa Rica, and then went to Bolivia for a month and a half, and was in Portugal for around 2 weeks before finishing or ending up because of coronavirus. But I definitely felt a shock at the beginning of my travels, because after finishing high school, graduating from high school, there really wasn't a lot. I didn't have a lot of responsibilities, and I could focus more on sustainability, because it was right as I was starting my first stage of veganism. And so I could be really into veganism and reduce all my meat consumption. I was gotten to the point where I was only eating eggs, and I was recycling so much and building eco blocks out of different scraps we had at home, and just making sure that everyone at my house was trying to live a sustainable lifestyle. And then going from this really eco-friendly and aware lifestyle to my gap year was a really big shock, especially since the first country I visited was Israel. And I remember just thinking, like, my first impression of Israel was, wait, where are the recycle bins? Because I had a water bottle. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, there's just one trash can everywhere. Like, what is happening? Because at least here, and definitely there's like five different trash cans wherever you go for every type of plastic. And then in Israel, there was nothing at all. So definitely there was a little bit of shock. And I remember talking to people about this, and Israelis also. And they said, there was a big consensus that said sustainability, of course, was an aim or a goal for them as a country, but really they had to have their priorities straight, since they were constantly pretty much at war, and their priorities were staying alive. And mm-hmm. having been in the army for 2 weeks, or actually volunteering on a base, you could really see that that it's the biggest priority in the country, and it doesn't matter to them as much what they're doing with their plastic or what's going on with sustainability when they have their lives at stake. So it definitely was a shock, because coming from a country that lives off of sustainability to one where it's not a priority was a big difference. And I could say the same thing about Italy, because at least the part I was in, which was Sicily and the southern Italy, there wasn't a big focus on sustainability either, living in the center of the big city, but definitely a little bit more than in Israel. And then spending time in France was just,
insane because I felt like I was really in a first world country, and this was what a first world country looked like, because there was so much about sustainability and about what you did with your water bottles and so many water bottle stations. And I just felt like it was a really big focus. I didn't really get to see much because I was just in Toulouse and Bordeaux, but I could definitely tell that there was a focus and that there was a higher level of education related to sustainability than in Italy or in Israel. And to finish that first leg of my gap year off in Iceland was just like the peak of sustainability. I was so impressed by how Iceland managed their sustainability problem, or how they managed climate change, because everything in the country is built around geothermal energy or around dams or plastic waste. And it's just amazing how sustainable they've gotten to be as a whole country, and how effective their government has been on educating people. Because the first week that I was in Iceland, the whole time I was in Iceland, I worked at this camp. But the first week that I was there, we went to the local like trash collection site. And I was so impressed that I was literally in what could be a landfill, but did not look like a landfill at all. And I was taking pictures because I was so shocked at how organized and clean and how user-friendly it was. Because the whole town where I was in, which was not a big town, it was around 200 people, would go there, have all of their trash sorted out perfectly, but another level of perfect. And they had trash cans for every single thing, and people would go and work and organize them even better. And it was just amazing to see how educated Icelanders really are regarding sustainability. And like, I even thought that I was really well versed in that in school, like I'd been taught how to recycle well and everything. And then that first week they asked me to separate the plastics, and I was just shocked that there were so many types of plastics and that everyone really knew them by heart. It wasn't just something that they were just kind of doing half-heartedly. Like, they really knew every single part of it, and they didn't think of it. It was just second nature to them. So mm-hmm. I thought that was really amazing.
Do you have photos of this on your photography account?
I do not have them on my photography account because they are very low quality. I just took them when I was amazed and probably very cold. But I could definitely post those in some stories so you all can see. Mm-hmm. But after Iceland, I came back to Costa Rica. And it's just what I mentioned, of course, already about sustainability, and I did get to appreciate it even more how sustainable Costa Rica was after going to all these countries. And after Costa Rica, Bolivia was also a really big shock, because again, the first thing that I had heard about Bolivia was how you couldn't drink the tap water. And so that meant to me that I had to be buying plastic bottles all the time, because if I drank the tap water, I could get really sick. And that was just something that I had to do, and I felt so uncomfortable doing, because there really weren't any other alternatives in Bolivia. Especially just the only thing you could do was probably just boil water, and it's something that we did at our hostel every day. But even then, like when you're out in the middle of the nature in Bolivia, or in some mountain, or in the salt flats, there isn't that option of boiling water and having it in your water bottle, and you have to buy plastic bottles. And it's the first thing that I thought of when I was there, was how draining tourism could be to Bolivia's environment, since every tourist has had to buy probably on average like 20 water bottles throughout their stay. And that was something that was kind of disheartening, but also something that I realized that a lot of people were starting to look into. And even people in Bolivia would tell tourists to boil their water, or to take their own plastic reusable water bottle, wherever they went. And that in hostels, you could get water for free and stuff like that. So there's definitely a bit a movement going on to change this issue. And Portugal, I can't say much because I wasn't there for a long time. But definitely there's a big range of sustainability efforts. And where I was a surf house in southern Portugal.
And they definitely had a big impact on a big focus on sustainability, recycling and composting, and just trying to take advantage of everything. But I can't speak much more than this particular surf house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we know, traveling is unfortunately a very high carbon hobby to have. So I was just wondering, how do you, or how did you, balance your values of living sustainably while traveling? So this can be to do with your accommodation, your modes of transport, or things that you would just do every day to minimize your impact.
Yeah, that's something that I didn't realize that I would have to confront while traveling. But it definitely is not the most sustainable activity, because the first thing that I had to give up while traveling was my short-lived semi-veganism stage. It lasted maybe a month into my travels, but after that, traveling on a budget and staying in places that aren't very vegan-friendly, that was the first thing that I probably had to give up. And I'm glad to have started it back up again, but while traveling, it was really hard to follow that lifestyle. But to compensate for that, of course, I tried to keep plane travel or airplane travel to a minimum, and obviously use public transport as much as possible, because even though it's something you don't think about, of course, you're not going to have a car while traveling, but just using public transport was probably the biggest thing that I tried to do. Even I remember while starting my gap year, I said, I'm not going to use any type of rideshare or taxi or private car service for transportation at all throughout this entire year. And it was also related to sustainability, because indirectly it has this sustainable impact of reducing your carbon footprint and using this public transport instead of wasting even more carbon. But it's also a way to get really in touch with the country you're in and the culture and see how public transport really is. And it's something that I enjoy the most, actually, because in every single country that I went to, I think I have a bus card or a metro card, and it's just comparing all these systems and everything that happens with all the stories I have with public transport was really an enjoyable experience, because it's living sustainably, but it's also traveling in the best way possible. So you don't really have to sacrifice anything to live sustainably while traveling by using public transport. And maybe since I moved around, I didn't do as much with sustainability as I could have, because I moved around so much and didn't have really time to settle into a single place. But definitely using public transport, staying in hostels that had more of an ecological mindset, like there's several in Bolivia that try to compost or recycle even better than the country they're in. These are small actions that are sustainable, but don't even feel sustainable when traveling, because it just feels like the right choice and the right thing to do while also connecting with the culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the best part about doing these more sustainable things is that you automatically get to see more of the country as well. Like if you're just walking around or if you're taking the local transportation, you can slow down and sort of appreciate everything that's around you more than if you were to be riding like an Uber.
Exactly.
A nice benefit.
it can be daunting at times, for sure. I remember in Iceland, like you need to download an app in Icelandic for going on to any bus, and you just have to present that, and you can get really lost really quickly. Or in Bolivia, where you have to like literally jump onto a minivan with like 20 people, and like that's the public transport, but it's stories that you won't forget and experiences that are really genuine. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun, really.
Yeah, like I remember in Nepal as well, one of the like main modes of transport in a village we were living in were these tuk-tuks, and they're sort of like their version of the taxis, but every time you wanted one, you'd have to like call for it. And obviously we weren't great at Nepali, and so it was like a huge test of our language abilities, our confidence, and also like so many different things coming into play. But it makes it so much more fun as well.
Yeah, I think the most long-lasting memories that I'll have are from in public transport, because like the most scarring thing and traumatic experience I probably had was like a 15-hour bus ride from Potosí in Bolivia to Santa Cruz, which is a very frequented airplane route, but I just wanted to take the bus. And of course, it's more sustainable to take the bus, but it was also a really interesting experience as I was the only person there that didn't speak a native tongue. I spoke Spanish, but there's so many indigenous languages in Bolivia, and I was the only person that didn't speak any. And even the bus driver would speak in, I have no idea what language it was, but everyone in the bus would seem to understand except me. And we'd go through the most remote places that I've seen in my entire life, just villages that had like two houses and that was the bus stop. And just, it was an experience that I'm never gonna forget, but one that I recommend, even though it was definitely challenging.
So you talked a bit about how in Iceland, I guess they are an extreme model for sustainability that other countries perhaps can learn from. Was there anything you gained from living in Iceland that you could integrate as an individual back into your lifestyle at home?
For sure. I think as a country, Costa Rica has a lot to learn from Iceland. I think the biggest aspect is education, though, because on paper, Costa Rica's sustainability is perfect. Like, there is so much investment on national parks. There's so much investment on the biodiversity and taking care of the environment. And it's such a draw because that's what the economy relies on. It's tourism and ecotourism and going to these biodiverse places. And since Costa Rica has 6.5% of the world's biodiversity and like the tiniest percentage, I think it's like 0.1% of the world's landmass, it's what everything in Costa Rica is about. But when it's put into practice, it really isn't a perfect model. And I think what it comes down to is just how Costa Ricans relate to the environment. And we don't know as much about recycling as maybe Iceland has done, because they've made an amazing job of having these amazing recycling plants all over the country and using 100% sustainable energy. And these are things that, of course, Costa Rica has implemented. Also, I remember a few years ago that it set a national record for the amount of days that it went with 100% sustainable energy from hydropower or geothermal energy. But these are things that are happening more at a like institutional level or as a government. These are things that the Costa Rican government is doing, but the people really feel they need to have a bigger role. And this comes from education and just knowing what to do and having another level of awareness with how to treat the environment, which I think was definitely present in Iceland. And this I could definitely speak of because I worked at a youth camp. So I think it's around 80% of the schools in Iceland go to this specific camp. And we would do activities with the kids and just spend tons of time outside and have team building activities and leadership activities. And this leadership was the main aspect of the camp, but it also had so much sustainability related activities that I was just thinking back on. And at the moment, it didn't really feel like we were teaching sustainability, but looking back on it, it was 100% just teaching kids how to be more in touch with nature. For example, we'd have weekly competitions of conserving, like who would waste the least amount of food. So the kids would be divided into different groups, and at the end, like, we'd count, like, after each meal, we'd count the grams of food waste. And so this was something that the kids got really into, and it would be a big competition and winning points for your team and making sure that no one would waste any food. And it's something that you don't even think about. It's just part of the camp life. But at the end, it's really showing the kids how to be sustainable with their eating choices and not waste food and maximize all of their resources. And also, we would have so much time outside in the nature. We'd have a walk every Wednesday, which also felt really like a camp type of activity and nothing to do with sustainability. But while we were doing it, we were just always telling the kids to appreciate spending time outside, appreciate spending time in nature. And these are things that, although it wasn't the main focus of the camp, it definitely had a big impact, at least on me as an outsider. And also a really important activity from the camp was baking your own bread in hot springs. So you'd get a milk carton and like the whole milk carton with rye bread ingredients, mix it up and everything. And then we'd go out to the lake, and there was this part that was really geothermically active and you could see all the smoke coming out. And so we'd, with some shovels, make a hole in the sand, put the milk cartons in there, which were sealed with plastic wrap. And the next day, 24 hours later, we'd come back with some shovels, shovel the sand off. And since the sand was literally boiling and the water was boiling, the next day the bread would have baked.
That's crazy.
And this was something that was so fun to do, but it was like amazing to see just taking advantage of the geothermal energy in the area. And it's something that supposedly has been done for generations in Iceland. And it was just amazing to see how you, like, even a person, like, you don't have to have a geothermal plant to take advantage of geothermal energy in Iceland, uh-huh. which was really amazing.
Whoa. I feel like the coolest, like, the most effective way of embedding into education is when it's subtle like that. I mean, okay, I guess the food waste one was really subtle because people don't realize that they're learning this information, but then they take it with them wherever they go in the future as well. So it becomes really impactful.
Exactly.
That sounds like the coolest thing ever. What was this camp called?
It's under their organization, UMFI, which is, it's in Icelandic, it's the youth movement in Iceland, which it has some ties to the government, but it's definitely something I recommend to anyone. That maybe if anyone listening to the podcast here is looking for a workaway experience, I definitely recommend it. And they're looking for help all the time because it's a really active environment. So if you want somewhere to learn about nature and just the Icelandic wildlife and work with kids and also be sustainable, it's definitely an option. It's umfi.com. Mm-hmm.
And what about if people want to participate in the actual camp? Do they have to be Icelandic?
Yeah, the camp is made for Icelandic teens. So they go with the schools and like as a generation, and all the teachers go as well. It's part of the school curriculum.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so speaking of youth getting more involved with environmentalism and also education, since you started your business with the biodegradable coconut shells when you were in high school, could you talk a bit more about how you started it? What was the process like starting this up? And also what advice you would give to anyone wanting to do something similar?
Really, this is a very unusual story. I feel it has nothing to do with some bright idea that came out of nowhere or some big passion that I'd had my entire life. And I think that's really encouraging also because it can really show how just a really good idea can come from almost nothing. Because how this started was one of my teachers, a math teacher actually, told one of my best friends, Lucia Matamoros, and I that there was this competition going on with reducing poverty levels. And you could win the opportunity to present your project later in Chile and at this big conference and receive funding to continue. And so we thought that it would be a great idea and that we should definitely join this competition. But the thing was that we didn't have a single project that had anything to do with poverty reduction. We had no idea what to do. And so we started thinking and just brainstorming, and this was something that we had to do before a deadline. And so we were just kind of pressed for time. And then one night we were just on the phone, just thinking about what we could do. And the idea just started forming, like literally out of just conversation. We started thinking like how we could do something related to the environment and how we could do something related to poverty. And we were thinking about just our lifestyles, and out of nowhere, we were just thinking like, oh, why don't we try to sell different types of flower pots that are biodegradable? And this probably came because we, at my house, my mom has this coconut type of flower pot, and I don't know, I just thought it was cool. And I mentioned it to her, and she was like, wait a minute, that's actually something that we could definitely do. And we started looking more into it and thinking about how coconuts were 100% biodegradable, they were natural, they were strong, and just taking the next step of then thinking, oh, we can sell this with a certain type of native plant. And just building on this idea, and then we came up with the idea of selling, of having this proceeds go to a charity on poverty reduction, or having classes with different low-income neighborhoods. And it was just a really creative phone call, and that was all that started this whole thing. And of course, it has changed a lot. We submitted our proposal to the competition. It was not accepted at all, but we had so much fun doing it. And I remember we went to this like supermarket center one Saturday morning to film our video for the competition. And it was like supposed to be a promotional video, kind of like an ad. And we were just so underprepared. We had to buy a coconut from the supermarket. We found some random plant on the side of the road and put it in. And we stole this price tag from, I think it was like a bag of chips, and made it look so that it was more professional for our video. And we just had so much fun working on it that we continued. And even though we didn't get into the competition, and we changed our vision really, and focused more on the sustainability aspect instead of the poverty reduction thing, which is something that we were more passionate about. And just when we started doing these things that were fun and were just more related to the environment, it started growing. And we did a giveaway at the beginning where we made around 60 to give to our local community, and they planted them, and now we have photos 2 years later that they send of how big the tree has gotten. And it was just this really small thing that started from this phone call, and now it's just so fun to continue working on and for it to continue growing like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. So I was just wondering, how do you source the coconuts and the seeds? Because I imagine that would be at least a lot of coconut.
Yeah. Surprisingly enough, this is another thing that I think is very unique to Costa Rica, but coconuts are very easy to get here. And in my family, just normally, we probably buy like 20 a week and just drink coconut water like every day. And that's something that definitely did not happen anywhere else that I traveled to. But it's really normal here to have coconut water. And so what we do is we collect coconuts that we've been eating or drinking this whole time. We cut them and clean them so that they can be used as flower pots. And then once we actually buy tree saplings from a local conservation center. We worked with the local university to determine like how it could work, and we had a partnership at the beginning, and then transitioned into this conservation center that used to be a zoo and used to work directly with the zoo. But once the zoo closed here, it became a center for just rehabilitating different types of tree species that are more endangered here in Costa Rica, and just tree species in general. And so we buy the trees from them, and we, after doing the research of what type of trees we would like to have and what the benefits of each one was, and we assemble the coconuts and market them. And that's just how it started. It's a really simple idea. Just put a tree in a coconut and have people buy it, and you can have it in your room, or you can plant it directly into the ground and it'll grow and the coconut will disintegrate. So it's just something really simple, but it's something that we were passionate about and that could have a really big impact as well.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And I feel like it's so iconically Costa Rica as well.
Yeah, for sure. There aren't a lot of countries where you can find coconuts that easily, I think.
Yeah. So since you're going to be going to university, what direction do you see this project going in? Will you be passing it down to other people, or are you going to take it with you somehow?
We definitely are passing it down. Even last year, we passed it down to another really close friend, and she was leading it now and going to different events in with different schools and having stands in different places. And now, actually, just recently, we rebranded our product and added two types of tree species. So now we have one flower pot sold with a tree designed to help pollinators, one designed to help increase agrobiodiversity, and a last one designed to rehabilitate native bird species. And did different designs for the logos and the tags for those. And those are going to be marketed by even another generation, since our friend is now going to college as well. And so we see this as just a way to have younger generations continually involved. And it's something that doesn't really need a lot of leadership or control from our part as the founding members. Like, we just kind of came up with the idea, we started it, we did the product, we started selling it. And now it's just something that we can teach other people to do. And it's, at the moment, we've just done it at our school and asked people that have been interested at our school to join. But we're definitely looking to expand and to maybe, we talked about doing the same thing at university, maybe not with coconuts, but just try to have some type of campaigns. Maybe it could be tree planting or different types of activities, just to highlight the native trees of each region and at each university that we're going to individually. So it might not be the original coconut and tree experience, but it's something that we want to maybe continue and have people take part in wherever we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like different product but same mission.
Exactly.
So since last week was Latino Conservation Week, and you've talked a bit about how growing up in Costa Rica has shaped your relationship with the environment and also encouraged you to live more sustainably. So I was just wondering, what does conservation look like to you, and how do you practice this in your everyday life?
Okay. I think conservation is just really noticing the and valuing the bond that we have with nature and that we will always have no matter what, and just reevaluating what development and what progress looks like. Because at least here, you can't have progress without having sustainability, especially because the whole country depends on nature and depends on tourism. So it's trying to integrate more with the nature and your environment, the environment around you, which is actually kind of the mission of what we have been doing with Cocosechas. It's just trying to have people fall in love with nature and fall in love with a tree, which is actually what we did. And we had our own plants that we started growing. Like, I personally was growing avocado trees and was really into them and was passionate about them and trying. I have no idea why. It was just caring for a plant. And then it grew into Cocosechas. And so it's just trying to have a closer bond to nature. And that can look so many different ways. There's people that live completely off-grid here in Costa Rica in small communities and have medicinal plants all over the place and fruits that they just pick from the trees and that's what they eat. And that's amazing, but it also doesn't mean that living in the city and just being more aware of recycling and your waste and your lifestyle can also be sustainability, and it can also be conservation, especially just trying to find that appreciation for nature and just thinking if what you're doing day to day can help nature in some way, or is it destructive? I think that's the first thing that you have to think of, and it's definitely what has helped me the most. Mm-hmm. It's just thinking, will this help in the long run? Will this be beneficial to me, or will this be beneficial to the environment? And if it's not, you just have to find a way to replace it. And that can all, of course, start really small and then grow. And it can be a dietary choice like veganism, or it can be just trying to use no plastic at all in your house. And it's just things that you have to be passionate about. Like, I think a really big tip is that you can't do something out of guilt, and you can't really just say, oh, the world is ending, like, we need to do something about the climate crisis now or we're all going to die. Like, we have to do this for our own survival and to save the world. Like, of course you do, but you also have to find that part of sustainability that you're passionate about and just try to incorporate those aspects into your daily lifestyle, which is something that I see people doing around here in Costa Rica bit by bit, but it's something that we can definitely improve and anywhere around the world, really.
Yeah, 100%. So since a lot of Costa Rica's economy is built on ecotourism and tourism in general, to anyone who eventually wants to visit Costa Rica as a tourist, what do you think is the best way to do that?
For sure, visit different eco-tourism related hostels or hotels. I think people have a skewed idea of what that means. Like, it doesn't mean that you're gonna be in a hut in the middle of nowhere eating nothing but trees from fruits. It's just that, just find the places that have a bigger focus on sustainability. Like, instead of finding some big hotel chain, try to find a smaller hostel or a guest house that has gardens or is really into composting, because there's tons of those around the country. It's just amazing how really all over the place most of these places where you can stay are based on sustainability. But also, just when visiting national parks, just taking part of the experience and learning from it, definitely hiring guides is a really big way to learn more, because I've lived here my entire life, and just a few months ago it was the first time that I went to the most visited national park in Costa Rica, which is the Manuel Antonio National Park. And it's this jungle/mangrove and beach, which is so pristine and so beautiful. And I went on my own thinking that I know enough, and at the end I just tried to join different tour groups the whole time, because really the guides teach you about everything of the ecosystem and how everything is related, and the animals that you see, and how every single tree is related to the ecosystem. And it's really amazing, because that's what Costa Rica has to offer, really, compared to other places. It's that really close connection and that information of being in the middle of the jungle, of an untouched ecosystem, and learning from it. And that's what the ecotourism is about. It's more than just going to this pristine beach and enjoying, and of course that's a big part of it, but it's also knowing why you're there and learning from it. And that's the biggest aspect that you can get out of Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So much of it is also about how you're being intentional with how you're supporting the economy, but also like how you're benefiting the people.
Exactly.
So, final question is, what is some general advice or resources you'd recommend to anyone who wants to learn more about sustainability, or who just wants to get more into environmentalism in general?
Honestly, I would just say, look at your own life and reevaluate your own life and realize what parts of it could be more sustainable, realize what parts maybe you're doing well at, and just try to reflect on how you can have a bigger impact. And I know that sounds really vague, but it's really how everything that I've done has started. I started getting more informed on veganism because I thought that, of course, I had heard about the environmental impact of meat and everything, but I never really realized it until I did the research. And so just taking that step to inform yourself more about sustainability, even in the smallest degree, once you read just one article, you're gonna want to read more. And that's what I find so amazing about sustainability and conservation. It's not something that you're necessarily doing because you feel like you have to do it. It's something that comes naturally, and it's something that you're growing to like. Like, I haven't made a single choice in my whole sustainability lifestyle that I like to think that I have, because I felt the need to, or because I felt pressure to, or because I felt like that's what I had to do to be a successful individual. It was just something that I saw that I had a passion about, and that I thought that I could do something about and could change. And it's just making these small changes that in your own lifestyle that will lead to even bigger changes without you even realizing it, or without you even wanting it. It's just something that happens. I literally went vegan overnight because I saw a documentary that changed my entire life. And I was just like, it's time. And it wasn't something that I said, okay, I'm going to have to do this for my diet, or I'm going to have to just start thinking about the environment every single time I eat. It was just, no, like, I want to live this lifestyle. I want to have this, just have this experience and see what it's going to be like. And it was amazing. And it's something that really anyone can do. And it doesn't have to mean that you have to go vegan. It doesn't have to mean that you have to start your own coconut company. It's just, you have to see what in your life could bring you a closer connection to nature, because that's what it's all about. It's really just finding that bond, going back to our roots, and finding that one thing that makes you really feel passionate about the world around you and make you want to conserve it. And that's it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to rate and review the show, because that makes a huge difference in helping me get the word of the podcast out. Also, don't forget to subscribe and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next Monday.